Hornet Sensei. Just back after 2 weeks staying in Cape Cod. How many of you have been in Cape Cod before? We usually stay in Truro, which is out near the tip. By the way, a cape is a piece of land that juts out into the ocean. I know that because I looked it up on the way home. But if you go all the way out to the end of Cape Cod, there's Provincetown, which is an old whaling community, which has been transformed into a pretty wild place, welcoming of every manifestation of humanity. Anybody familiar with Provincetown? It was a large gay and lesbian population, cross-dressing. I'm forgetting the terms, but it's not unusual to be walking down the street, commercial streets, the main street. Even though you're allowed to drive on it, it's almost impossible because there's so many people walking back and forth. And, you know, to have men in high heels coming up to you and handing you cards about shows that they're going to perform in at night. And it's touching in a way because if you're different, there's no stigma in Provincetown. At least that's what I make up about it. It certainly seems to be that way. You're totally free to be who you are. And I don't mean like a mass murder or anything, but in terms of gender or sexual identity. So if you drive out the Cape, the further out the Cape that you go, the more and more remote it becomes, the less developed it becomes. And Truro and North Truro are just before the end, which is where Provincetown is. Now, Provincetown is very well developed. A lot of housing, as you can imagine, because it was a whaling community. But just before that, there's much less housing than there is natural environment. And one of the things that we've loved over the years about Cape Cod is a beach called Long Nook. The main road that you get out to the end of Cape Cod is called Route 6. It's really a two-lane highway, one lane going each way. And off of Route 6 is a road called Long Nook Road. And at the end of that road is Long Nook Beach, which is usually, if you Google, you go online, and you put in the 10 most beautiful beaches in the world, Long Nook is usually included in that. And as you drive out, there are in the beginning of the road, it's not that long, it's maybe a mile, if not less. If you drive out this road, you know, there are some houses and residents, although you only know they're there because you see the driveways. They're really back into the woods. When you drive out and you get to the end, there's parallel parking. And the parking is about 200 feet above the beach. And the way that you get down to the beach is these sand paths that are made into the front of the dunes. And if you're standing on the beach and you turn around and you look back at land, there are these dunes that are enormously high and stunningly beautiful. And then in addition to that, there's, again, something that's really, it's hard to describe using words, but the lighting and the color in Cape Cod is just spectacular. So you have that as well. The other beautiful thing about Long Nook Beach is, well, it changes every year, but this year in particular, the break of the waves is fabulous. There was one day when I guess there were 5 or 6 foot waves. The access is limited by the number of people that can park in this parking lot, so it's never crowded. But these waves, if you're a surfer, it was perfect for surfing or boogie boarding or, you know, body surfing. You could literally go out and, you know, at waist high, maybe, I don't know, a couple hundred feet from shore. And just as the wave was breaking, just put your arms out and fall down in front of it. It would take you all the way up until you were literally lying belly down on the beach. That's how perfect they were. So because it's not developed out there, it's all natural and it's all sand dunes. One night, when there's nobody there, I drove out the road to the end and laid in the sand and looked at the sky. And when it's dark like that, it's incredible what you see when you look up into the sky. It's crystal clear sky. There were no clouds at all. Now, the Milky Way looked like cloud cover. There's just so much that you can see that you don't ordinarily see around here with all the ambient light. You know, it makes it much harder to see. And the Big Dipper, almost literally, you know, it was like, if I look out this way, there's the ocean, right? And if I lay down right above my head is the Milky Way and a myriad of stars. I don't know that many of the stars. And then right off to the right, almost sitting on top of a sand dune, was the Big Dipper. And seeing it is like seeing it no other place. You know, I'm sure if you've been into the mountains and done a variety of things, you've seen skies like this. But it's so stunning. And so just laying there and trying to remember, you know, you take the handle of the Big Dipper and you follow the arc to Arcturus as a bright star. And just, you know, the few things that I know about the night sky. So I was just laying there, and eventually, I guess I would say that my mind stopped thinking about what I was seeing, and I was just looking up. And I realized that I was staring into infinity. But it wasn't a big story about infinity. It was just knowing somehow that I was staring into infinity. It was a calm night, so there wasn't much sound. I hadn't walked down to the beach. I was laying on the ground up on top of the dune. So it was very, very quiet. But somehow in laying there looking into this sky, there was a silence that was very different than what you would be used to naming silence. Vimalakirti, a famous Zen teacher, referred to what takes place when you're really sitting deeply as a thundering silence. And that's what this was. There was so much energy in space. It was so alive that it was thundering is just the word that you would put on it. Now, the words come afterwards. At the time of the experience, it's just the experience, you know. Feel the pulsating of that energy of space. And at the same time, it's totally silent. So I'm going to say a few words. I've talked about silence before in talks. So I'm going to say a few words about silence, because I think this has a direct relationship to our sitting. A Zen teacher, Zen Rinkushu, wrote, "Sitting silently, doing nothing, spring comes and the grass grows by itself." You know, you can't see the grass grow as you're sitting there. Over time, you can notice that it's growing, but you can't actually see the grass growing. Same thing with spring. You can't really see it coming. You just know that it's there. But if you talk about spring and you talk about grass, it's sort of flat. But in silence, spring and the growing of grass is incredibly dynamic. Now, Jim sent out an email, which I hope most of you have read. He was talking about in the article where, I don't know whether it was Jim was talking about, I guess the article that he read, about all the different things, the neurological changes that take place in the mind when there is silence. So I would encourage you to read that. It may account for some of the reasons that this silence is so dynamic, that it's not flat, it's not absence. So what is the essence of the silence to which Zen Rinkushu refers? The silence is realized by sitting zazen, or the silence which is realized by sitting zazen, is not silence as opposed to speech. It's a silence that transcends any explanation or any comparison. And in Zen, we call that true silence. True silence. I-Tuan said, "Speech is blasphemy. Silence is a lie. Above speech and silence, there is a way out. It is this way out to which I am referring when I speak about true silence." And of course, true silence exists outside the label true silence. If we practice zazen with diligence and with great faith, our minds eventually become still, and they transcend dualities such as life and death, love and hate, good or bad, sacred and secular. And we enter a state that you've heard called many times, just being. Just being without the reference point that we call me. A state which is beyond ideas, names and concepts. It's the experience of things as they are, unnamed. And at that point, the mind is alive, dynamic, and free, not abiding in anything or anywhere. Ling Yu writes, "Like the clear stillness of autumn water, pure and without activity, in its tranquil depths are no obstructions." Manjushri describes silence as a condition, quote, "where we have left behind all questions and answers." So as I was saying when I was talking about my experience of laying on the beach, it's important to note that the silence to which I'm referring is not a trance or a state of passivity. It is actually when we are the most alive, most engaged, and most connected to life. Again, Vimalakirti described this condition as thundering silence. And that was exactly what I, as I mentioned, what I experienced there, just being present to this sky. It was almost as if the universe was offering itself as an opportunity to really experience it. It was so vast and it was just so alive that my mind just stopped. And there was this thundering silence. Now also, true silence is not found outside ourselves, nor is it dependent on external conditions. Right? So you don't have to drive to Cape Cod. You can sit on your cushion and experience this. Because it's when we are undisturbed within ourselves, when we are at peace. So thundering silence is everywhere, in every moment. And Zazen offers us the opportunity to realize that. So if we embody this silence, we will find that it is in everything we do, that it is everywhere, and that the gift of true silence is available to everyone. In a sense, it's our birthright. But we must practice to manifest it, to realize it. It is the primary condition in which the seeds of enlightenment will flourish. So I encourage you to have faith in yourself and in the truth of these words, and to practice diligently so you can manifest, so you can realize true silence within yourself. Thank you.